Conversations, a new program about food in all its aspects. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKVS FM 93.7. The Voice is partnering with the Shoeshop Food Action Society in presenting this series of programs about all aspects of food, from planting to eating, centered around enhancing food sovereignty in the Shoeshop. This radio version of Food Conversations is inspired by the series of live food conversations held at Okanagan College under the auspices of the Shoeshop Food Action Society and coordinated by Ron Burr, an active member of both the Voice of the Shoeshop and the Food Action Society. Ron passed away in 2020, and we are dedicating this new series to Ron's memory. Now, food sovereignty means developing a reliable, safe, healthy, affordable, and abundant food supply for the people of the Shoeshop, going straight from local producers to local consumers. Our current food system is neither efficient nor sustainable. It relies on shipping routes that reach around the world, generating huge amounts of climate-heating greenhouse gases, and decisions made in faraway corporate boardrooms often affect the availability of food locally. Food grown here is frequently exported, and much food sold here comes from hundreds or even thousands of miles away. We have everything we need to establish food self-sufficiency right here in the Shoeshop, using technological innovation, modern and ancient science, and a healthy dose of cooperation with Mother Nature. But this will require collaboration and partnerships. Through Food Conversations broadcasts, we hope to inspire you to take a hand in developing local food production, whether it's through your own home garden, buying local food, or supporting growers and public institutions already making a difference. And of course, we welcome your ideas for future Food Conversations broadcasts. Finally, we hope that through these programs, you will be inspired to start your own food conversation with family, friends, and neighbors, and become part of the food community. Together, we can help create what we all need and want, a supply of fresh, abundant, and healthy food produced right here in the Shoeshop. So you're listening to Food Conversations, and I'm your host, Warren Bell, and this is CKVS FM 93.7, the Voice of the Shoeshop. Today, we have three really important and interesting guests, all involved with the Shoeshop Food Action Society. Shelley Corbin, who was the co-creator of the original Food Conversations, Melanie Bennett, who's the secretary of the Shoeshop Food Action Society, and Serena Kaner, who is its president. Now, Shelley, I'm going to start with you and ask you a few questions about how you got involved in this process. First of all, you were a teacher for 30 years in the public school system, but you also were interested in food a long time ago. In fact, you did something about it.
Well, yes, in my early 20s, I actually would go out and volunteer on an organic farm called Riverbend Orchard near Kamloops. Yeah, so I learned a lot from those folks, a little ahead of the curve they were, you know, re-mainstream. But after eating out there, I recognized that, wow, like this food tastes better. And of course, I began to learn. I'm a lifelong learner, teacher, learner, and I did a lot of study, a lot of independent study.
And you brought food into the classroom.
I absolutely brought food into the classroom. there may be a couple of kids out there that remember this. I had a little mini course in my second, I think it was, year of teaching in the Caribou at the junior high. It was a little mini course called You Are What You Eat. And we went out, gathered rose hips, made rose hip jelly. We made yogurt. We did all kinds of things that were a little unorthodox at the time. But the parameters were rather loose, and I thought, let's go for it. Kids loved it.
That's an interesting start to a career that's incorporated food a lot. Now, your partner, your partner Ron Burr, you started informally with some food conversations, didn't you?
Well, just as in your introduction, Warren, we talked about food almost every night for sure, mm-hmm. and lots of times in the day earlier.
Yeah.
Ron had grown up with delicious food that was very fatty and sugary and meaty and all those things that taste so good. He'd worked for IBM. He traveled a lot, on the road a lot, and he really didn't have time to even think about nutrition.
So you're doing a little instruction along the way, as a good teacher does.
It just evolved, you know, mm-hmm. because I like to explain things. My kids will tell you that. Like, Mom, just say do it, for God's sake. You don't have to explain everything. But Ron was a very open person, as mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and
willing to try new things, too.
Absolutely. And it was so wonderful for me.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter what I cooked. Even when it was God-awful, he'd say, oh, my gosh, this is good. And I'd say, Ron, this is not good, but it's healthy.
Well, healthy is a very good place to start. So you went from informal conversations to a formal series of public presentations. How did that transition take place?
Well, the answer to this is a bit odd. Ron, as you know, also liked to design and build houses. And it
such
was
as the one you lived in.
Our third project was the one we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ready, I think, for another. I could read all the signs by then, after, you know, close to 20 years of knowing him.
Right.
And I thought, this man needs a project, and it's not going to be building yet another house. And so we joined the Food Action Group. I was on the education committee under Jerry Paquette.
Mm-hmm.
However, we weren't really getting off the ground in reaching out,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was kind of preaching to the choir. And so part of our conversations over dinner were, how can we get this further out into the community?
Mm-hmm.
How can we reach more people
sure.
about information that I felt everybody knew? And Ron said, oh, no, a lot of people don't know about this.
So where was the very first food conversation in public? Where did that happen?
It was at the market that was at the West End.
The Urban Market?
Urban Market.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were very kind in giving us their upper floor. And I believe it was spring. The weather was warm anyway. And I think we had sometimes as many as 20 people out, maybe mm-hmm. a couple of dozen. A lot of them we knew, you know, supportive folks who, again, wanted to learn more and wanted to be in a position possibly to share what they knew.
So the food conversation started off there. How over the years did the content change? I know it sort of elaborated and developed over time. How did that happen?
Well, when it was there, Warren, Ron did most of the presenting with, videos online maybe that he'd found. We had a screen, I think, and a projector, articles, reading, asking questions, and it was quite a lot.
Hmm.
So we thought, there are a lot of very expert people in the areas of food right here in the Shoe Swap. Why don't we reach out and get people to come and present? I'm not sure how the college heard about it, but I think they approached us, or maybe we approached them. Honestly, a few things are fuzzy now,
mm-hmm.
other than my hair.
So you got started there, and then you moved to the college. The thing that you also mentioned to me at some point was that the scope broadened. You started to talk about bigger issues to do with food.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I think those were there from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Ron was a guy who liked to send a message, you know, in his poetry and in what he was doing. And once he realized that food was not quite the way it used to be when he was a very young lad, mm-hmm. that there had been a lot of changes due to the big mass conventional monoculture kind of farming. He was really on it, and he wanted to make change.
I'm going to ask you, Melanie. Melanie Bennett, as I mentioned earlier, is the secretary of the Shuswap Food Action Society. Get you in on some of the ways that we went from a series of presentations to the community to radio programming. Now, first of all, just a little bit about you. You had a varied lifestyle before you started to become involved in the food movement. Scuba instructor extraordinaire and a wedding planner on the side. Tell us a little bit about that kind of background, which, like all people, is varied and interesting.
Yes, absolutely. I grew up in the Okanagan. Just love this area. Never really knew exactly what I wanted to do, to be honest, but I knew I wanted to travel. And so I did all that. Really grateful for it because it sure opens your eyes to what's out there in the world.
What did you see that maybe you can see later connected you to your interest in food?
Well, you see a lot of poverty, certainly when you're traveling in other countries. One of my favorite places that I've ever been is Thailand, which of course has the most amazing food. So there, though, there is an appreciation for food, for meals, for fresh ingredients. I took some cooking classes and everything while I was there, too. So my love of cooking and love of eating has always been a part of my life.
It's always a good thing to have tied together, making the food and eating it. You also got some planning and organizing experience through the family business.
Yes, my parents own a business in Kelowna. It's called the Tickle Trunk and also TTM Events. And so I grew up with that party store, planning, always lots of fun. And when I moved back from traveling and I moved back to Canada, I came back to the Okanagan and started working with my family business and went right into events and wedding planning. And that has led me certainly to my interest and abilities to be able to take an event and break it down into projects, which has led me to being a good fit for secretary for the Shuswap Food Action Society.
Absolutely.
I like to break projects down and try and make them happen.
That's a very good way to do projects in pieces.
Yes.
But there was a point you told me that about 12 years ago, a little light went on in your head. And tell us about that. Tell your listeners about that.
Yes, I'm glad you asked, because I feel it's so appropriate. The fact that 12 years ago, really my journey into the interest of food and food security and where our food comes from came from listening to a radio series out of the Kootenays.
On community radio?
Radio.
There we are.
And it's a series called Deconstructing Dinner. And it's still available as a podcast. And I really encourage people to go and look for it as a podcast, because all of the information is completely relevant today and as important.
So do you remember what you heard in that program that really got you going? The kind of stuff you heard that really got you inspired?
Yeah, it's pulling back the curtain on the food industry. It's seeing behind the curtain of what really is happening, where our food comes from. Certainly much to do with animal welfare when you're thinking about where do your eggs come from? How about the pork industry? So when you start learning these things, it's really, you can't unlearn them. You hear them and it makes you want to go and learn more and go down the rabbit hole, so to speak.
We've got you up to an interest in food, but you also actually began working in the food industry.
The retail end of it.
Yes.
Yes. So when I moved to the shoe shop, I didn't want to be in events anymore because I found it way too stressful, to be totally honest. I knew that I loved food. I loved agriculture. I became very interested in wanting to know how to grow food. So I moved to the Shuswap because it's absolutely stunning here. Smaller, quaint, rural. And I was given a great opportunity with Harriet and James Hanna to work at Hanna and Hanna's Orchards. Mm-hmm. And though I knew nothing about anything plant related, they took me on because I pushed and pushed, and I was able to learn so much from working there. Mm-hmm. From working there, I met my husband, and his family has land, and I'm so grateful for it because it has afforded me the opportunity over the last, you know, 5 years, 7 years, I should say, to learn how to grow our own food. And it is a beautiful journey that I feel very passionate about.
Now, Ron and Shelley, Ron Burr and Shelley Corbin, were part of the Shuswap Food Action Society. They were on the board for some time. And they approached the board, I believe, with the concept of the food conversations notion. And I gather that went over pretty well.
Yes, absolutely. I have to be honest, I wasn't actually there when it was first initiated, but I certainly participated, and I was able just to assist in, you know, updating some posters and, you know, getting it out on Facebook. That's kind of the role I took at first. And I went to some of the college talks, but with children of a very young age, I found those times to be really challenging. There would have been so many more that I would have liked to participate in, but it was just a little bit too late. It was at bedtime.
And also, it would be fair to say that with small children, you knew how important food was in their own personal development.
Yes. I mean, having children, I already was interested in food, but having children really changed my perspective too. I knew that that was a priority for me. Being able to feed my children well, teach them how to cook, that took on a new level of importance for me.
So you went from a mom with young children coming to a food-oriented set of presentations and then becoming involved in the Shuswap Food Action Society yourself, to a fateful meeting in the spinach patch of the Shuswap Food Action Society's teaching garden. What happened there one fine day when a certain gentleman walked into the garden?
Well, just to back up a moment, I mean, when Ron was no longer able to host the food conversations, we unfortunately had to sort of let the project go for a while. We didn't have anybody else quite yet to step in to do that. But we knew it was so important to continue this really powerful project. I mean, education is a part of our mandate. So we talked about it at nearly every board meeting, saying we have to keep going with the food conversations, but how? Mm-hmm. And so last year, our main focus, we had a few main focuses, but one of them was the Shuswap Community Teaching Garden that we have in partnership with the Family Resource Center. And that was when, so Steve Corey, producing the show today, he was a part of the committee for this garden. He was there helping, and we were there doing our harvest day for Second Harvest, and in walks Warren Bell, who is on the board of the Voice of the Shuswap.
And who is trying to give away a giant zucchini that was far too big for him to consume himself.
So it was harvest day, so you were coming because you were going to bring some produce for us to take to the Second Harvest. And it just, it's one of those light bulb moments. You know, you just have the aha moment where here's Steve, a past producer and show host, Warren on the board. Fellas, come on, can we get this on the radio?
You had us trapped and we had you trapped. We were mutually trapped.
It was meant to be, absolutely.
and then we went from there. Right? We went to laying out a format, having discussions with staff, our main manager at the station here, Jeanette Clement. And I recall you saying that empowering people with information was an important part of this whole process.
Absolutely. Education is powerful. And like I said, you know, once you start learning these things, you can't unlearn them. And we want to reach as many people as we can. At the college was great. It's a great setting. People could participate, talk back and forth. But there was only ever the certain amount of people who could attend, who could make it that night. This gives us so much more opportunity to reach a broader audience. There's going to be multiple airings. Hopefully we'll have a link that people can listen anytime. As a mom, when I'm in the kitchen cooking, I like listening to something. That's how I like to learn, whether it be podcast or in this case, a repeated broadcast of this show. So indeed, this gives us wonderful reach.
Yeah, I think everyone on this show and a lot of people in the community understand that with radio, you can have it sort of part of your thought process while you're doing other things. And it sort of sinks in, the ideas that you hear about sink in a painless kind of way. Now, we're going to talk some more, Melanie, you and I, about the coldest night of the year, because that's the project that you're really a central person in organizing. I want to talk a little bit more, though, with Serena Kaner, who's the president of the society. Serena, you're the one person of our among our guests today who really committed to food in all its glory in a very big way. You went to UBC and got your degree as a registered dietitian, and you graduated in an era when the thinking about food was going through a transition in 2003. So UBC was making some changes about the way it programmed. Tell us about that a little bit.
So yeah, the first year, or my third year of UBC, the program got transmitted to Land, Food, and Community, the Faculty of Land, Food, and Community. And I think now it's the Faculty of Land and Food Systems. So suddenly we were science students, and so we were mostly in classes with, you know, biologists and chemists, and then suddenly we were in the Department of Agriculture. And most of us, I think, had, you know, never really been to the farm before, so to speak. That was really where I began to think about food more as, you know, something that you grow rather than something that you buy at the store.
For sure. And did that shape your thinking later on when you came here to the Shoe Swap? I know you worked for the Interior Health Authority and are still working a bit part-time, but you were a total of 13 years. So you were actually working with and around food and prescribing, as it were, food for people in the health system. But your thinking was branching out beyond what you saw in the health care model. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a bit tricky being a dietitian these days, because I think most people go into dietetics because they love food. But then you're kind of pushed into an industry that sees food not really as medicine, but as sort of a commodity of something that they have to, you know, purchase. And they're always trying to cut costs in healthcare, and food is a really easy place to cut costs. And it's seen as a really acceptable place to cut costs. Mm-hmm. So in my years working at hospital, I've seen the food really, what I think is the food quality has really decreased. Mm-hmm. And the importance placed on food has also decreased. And I just sort of felt, you know, the role of a dietitian is in how we're funded in healthcare is to see people after they've been diagnosed with some kind of disease. So once you have a heart attack, then you get to go see a dietitian. And it just seemed a bit futile, like it's too late.
It seems like shutting the barn door after the horse is about 10 miles down the road.
Yeah, and then the other people you see are, you know, people who legitimately can't afford a healthy diet. Mm-hmm. And so it's great that I can tell them the foods that they should be eating. But their sort of lived reality, their lived experience, the jobs that they have to work, the families they have to raise with the limited income they have, really precludes them from having access to a healthy diet.
Yeah, so there's other things that influence what people eat besides just food quality and what they would like to eat.
Right.
So you've been, you know, connected to the Shoe Swap Food Action Society for some years, and I understand that part of your actualizing your broader vision of food took place because you started to attend some of the Food Conversations events.
Yeah, I think, you know, you develop a real curiosity about, you know, other people's experiences of food, and like Melanie, I also went traveling when I was younger. And, you know, the experience that really formed my view of food is I lived in Malawi in Africa for 2 6-month periods in a rural village. And the one village was surrounded by a tea plantation. So I really understood
tea.
I know where my tea comes from, and sort of the quality of life of the people who work there. And so when I moved here, I mean, I'm always interested in different perspectives on food, and I realized that people don't just eat because of science. So, you know, I think we need to start looking at food with a broader lens and seeing it as culture and seeing it as community. And so that really drives a lot of our work at Shuswap Food Action.
I think that's a very broad and wonderful vision. But Serena, you were talking about how you became engaged in the society itself. And one of the ways was that you went to some of the food conversations and you heard some comments that you thought weren't as science-based as you felt comfortable with, and you wrote to Ron Byrne. What happened then?
Yeah, I wrote, I was just sort of saying, you know, I went to this talk, I didn't really agree with, you know, what the woman was saying, and here are my concerns. And so he invited me to come to one of the meetings.
I think you said it was a really beautiful email.
Oh, okay. And so I attended one of their meetings, and yeah, it was, you know, mostly a bunch of old men sitting around venting about the food system, and I was like, these guys need a little bit of help.
Well, I won't confess to being an old man, and Steve is extremely young as well, so we know that we can participate in this exercise along with you three ladies. Anyway, so. Did you got involved, but you went further. You actually joined, you know, you became a central figure in the Shuswap Food Action Society. And I know that what you were talking about before, working in the hospital systems, the best they can do is secondary prevention. You're already sick, so we're going to stop you from getting sicker if we can through some dietary intervention. But primary prevention, which is starting before people get sick. Talk about that a little bit, because I know that's a passion for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's sort of a lot of evidence to suggest that it's much cheaper to prevent someone from getting sick than to treat them once they are sick. And yet, we don't put any money in our healthcare system into prevention. So I think that was something I really wanted to bring to my work. And I find doing it now, I find it, you know, much more rewarding. So a lot of our programs have focused on food literacy. So that's learning how to cook, learning how to grow. And one of the first projects that I came up with was something called Kindy Buddies. And the idea that it was a cooking program for kindergarten students and seniors in the community, and they would cook a meal together and eat it. And part of why I created that program is that my youngest child at the time was a very picky eater. and it's actually
every mother's nightmare.
Yeah, it's very normal to be picky eater when you're young. But when kids start school, it's sort of a really ideal time to really to pressure that idea, because they feel like they're old because they're starting school. There's a lot of pride in starting school and of meeting new friends, and you can really use that peer pressure to your advantage in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So I would be cooking something with my daughter in the class that she would never eat at home. In fact, I often tested the recipes on my kids, and they'd be like, ew, this is gross. But as soon as she was surrounded, like as soon as I was out of the equation and she was surrounded by her peers, you know, she was eating platefuls of things or bowlfuls of soups that, you know, I knew she wouldn't eat in our house, and telling me how good they were. And so it just goes to show that, you know, there's a real loss not having that food literacy in in schools right now. Mm. And I definitely understand why teachers don't do cooking in schools. I mean, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of preparation. There's a lot of cleanup.
Right.
And there's just so much else going on right now that, you know, it's not a priority, but it is a missed opportunity.
Melanie, you talked also about young children, and have you noticed that, as you said, when you had your own children, that you really started to think about the role of not of many things, but of course, food is a substantive part of their life, and it has a substantive influence on their health. Did that also really animate your engagement as you, part of the younger generation, moving into the Food Action Society? Did you find that that was something that drove your passion as well?
Well, certainly I want our next generations to know how to grow food. Mm-hmm. It's a skill that's important. And I believe that kids in the garden are going to have a far more interest in trying the foods directly from the garden. You know, the things that I read and learned was that I really wanted my kids to be eating just a whole food diet. I do really try to not have a lot of processed food, which can make it very challenging sometimes. I absolutely understand that. So I do spend a lot of time. I prioritize cooking. I prioritize food and lots of fruits and vegetables and from the garden as much as possible, sometimes to my children's dismay. But I'm a little bit hard, hard-nosed on them, to be honest.
We'll get your children on the program
someday. I'm not very soft when it comes to...
I'm going to be seeing her children later on in life about the trauma of the mother.
Shelley...
But they're going to have an apple in hand.
Yes, they will. They will, and they'll be enjoying every minute of it. It's ironic that a natural food products company sells capsules containing the bacteria that are found in soil, which you can buy and feed yourself if you can't get fresh vegetables from your own garden.
Yeah.
The other thing, Shelley, I just wanted to ask you, you're looking at it from a long career in teaching and educating, and you're hearing two women coming from the next generation, as it were, bringing forward the ideas that have been important to you as well. What's it like to see that happening?
Well, it's exciting to see it happening. And as Melanie and Serena were speaking, you know, I'm thinking, keep at it, ladies, because my guys are now in their 30s. Mm. But when they were younger, there was a little resistance, not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I remember Joran coming from a cub camp at age 12 after a weekend, coming in the door and saying, "Mom, could you cook some broccoli, please?" Apparently, he'd had pancakes for breakfast, hot dogs for lunch, and Kraft dinner for supper. And he was just screaming.
Well,
so it does pay off. And both of my guys love to cook, and they are good cooks, and they are super attentive to nutrition and, you know, what's in their food, not too much fat, all that. Well, actually, more fat right now is the rage, but you know.
There's good fat and there's good bad fat.
Yes, yeah.
Indeed. So, Serena, the Shushaw Food Action Society has a variety of programs that address food issues. Now, you mentioned some of them, but let's just kind of run down the list. I got a list here, and it gives a little bit of background on them. There's, first of all, there's a downtown farmers market, which also has a coupon system, but the market itself, talk about that.
Well, I love farmers markets. I've always loved farmers markets, and farmers markets love me because I'm the person who goes there and spends way too much money. But I was missing a farmers market because, you know, the one here kind of dissolved. And I'm like, you can't be a small farming town and not have a farmer's market.
Yes.
And you know, local farmers who don't produce enough to sell to large grocery stores, they need somewhere to sell their food. It was really a priority to me. I'm like, if we are going to support local food and sustainable agriculture, we need to have a good farmer's market.
And you introduced this coupon system to make it easy for some people who would otherwise have difficulty buying a lot of food to get access to the goodies.
Well, I didn't make the system. The government has the system that we participate in. So the nutrition coupon program is a government system that gives low-income families $25 a week to spend at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we got some funding to do a shoe swap box, which was a subsidized box of produce and eggs and bread to help families who were suffering in response to COVID-19. So our farmer's market does increase access. I mean, the point of these programs is to increase access to local foods to more people.
The food box program, you know, the way it's you've described it would sound like it's sort of fairly small scale, but in actual fact, it's generated a lot of sales indirectly of food from this area. How much total has it generated? I bet it's quite a bit.
Well, we did the math, and it was about $73,000 that we have spent on towards local farmers and local food producers this past year.
That's very substantial. That is very substantial. So the Teaching Garden, we talked about it. Melanie and I have talked about it. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, so the vision of the Teaching Garden is to become more of a teaching garden. Right now, it's a partnership with the family, the Shuswap Family Resource and Referral Center. And we grow food, and most of it goes to the Second Harvest, who really appreciate it because, you know, food banks do get a lot of canned goods donated, but the fresh food is always more tricky because, you know, storing food is tricky. And the nice thing when it comes directly from the garden is it really increases its shelf life because it's just been picked.
Sure.
When you buy, you know, food at the grocery store, you don't know when what food was picked. So it has a good storage life. And we have had a few community groups bring clients there to do just sort of one-on-one working in the garden. So we've partnered with, you know, the Association of Community Living, and CMHA has brought people. And so it's kind of a healing space for people and to learn skills and, you know, just to see where their food comes from.
The UBC farm has done programs like that, and they've been enormously successful. It's wonderful to see that, bringing people into a gardening space who, for one reason or another, might not have access to that in their own lives, but doing it with somebody around who can help them orient themselves. It's a wonderful idea. Now, in addition to that, you've also organized tours to farms around the area. I know that with COVID, that's been a bit of a problem. I went on one of the farm tours and enjoyed enormously meeting some of the farmers out in the community who were only too happy to share their experience. How did that come about, the farm tours?
You know, Melanie probably can. She was really foundational, and Ron, and in organizing those. But the idea behind it is just that a lot of people, we've lost that connection to where our food comes from, and a lot of people are unaware that, you know, we can grow a lot of the food right here in the shoe shop. And I think that appreciation of where your food comes from, as well as learning how to grow food. You quickly whenever you start growing your own food, you quickly realize it's not easy.
So
that actually takes skill.
Melanie, add your comments to what Serena said.
Yeah, so Ron and Shelley actually initiated it. It was first visit a farm. And I think that was in like 2017 is when they started it. And then the subsequent year, it happened again. And then for 2019, we actually got partnership with Shuswap Tourism and Salmon Arm Economic Development to increase its reach, you know, posters and ads and papers. So that, you know, connecting with those farmers to allow them to open their gates, so to speak, to let people in. Again, that's opening, letting people see behind the curtain And like Serena said, when you can go and see the effort it takes, these farmers, their operation, mm-hmm. you really appreciate how what they charge for their food, which is not anywhere near enough, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And the lifestyle, and it's a beautiful lifestyle. We really need to appreciate it, because we need to support our farmers in times of good so that they'll be there in times of bad.
Shelley, you and Ron started it up. How did that happen?
Conversation. I think it was over breakfast.
Food does a lot of things to people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Makes them talk.
And we'd had a garden, and it was probably not quite a first, but Ron had not had much time to garden in his previous incarnation. Mm-hmm. And he was really excited about growing food. I happened to have a couple of tomato angels, my dad and my old Italian neighbor from when I was a little girl. And Ron was just amazed to think that we could take the seeds from last year's tomatoes, dry them out, soak them, plant them, and get all those tomatoes for tomato sauce, spaghetti, lasagna.
They come back to visit you, don't they?
Yeah, and Ron loved to eat.
Probably a useful thing for anybody to do.
So visiting the farms, that was the idea. Where does this happen? Things more than just tomatoes.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to actually visit a farm. When I was a kid, we used to go out to UBC to look at the chickens and the cows. back to you, Serena. You have some other, the Shuswap Food Action Society has other programs that are kind of a little bit on hold. Community potlucks, what are they?
So the community potlucks is just what it sounds like. It's a potluck and everybody's invited. And it was in partnership with the First United Church, but you know, it wasn't a religious event, but it was, you know, they've really opened their doors to the community, and people just brought food, and you just sat with people you may or may not know, and you get to know your neighbors essentially. And they were lovely. We had music and we had door prizes, and you know, you never knew who you were going to sit next to.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to break bread, as they say, with another person. It breaks down a lot of barriers as well as the bread itself. You also have put on some movie shows, presentations in the community. What's that been like? Which of you, Melanie or Serena, which of you had the primary role in that? I'm allowing you to...
Usually Serena, she would be the one ordering the... The DVDs.
The DVDs. Isn't it wonderful how you can get so much stuff these days in that format? So, Serena, how did that sort of pan out?
I don't know. I think, so I'm from Vancouver. So I am from a big city, and I've been in a shoe shop now for about 13 years. But it still blows my mind that you can, like, call up the movie theater and be like, oh, I want to do this showing of this movie. And they're like, sure, what time? So I've been, you know, it's such a lovely thing. And so we know that lots of people like watching movies. And that's a really engaging platform. So mm-hmm. we rented out the movie theater and we made popcorn and cookies and we just invited everyone to come watch these movies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, movies, documentaries about food are very impactful.
And there's a number of really good ones out there right now.
There sure are, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And as a teacher, Shelley, you could see the advantage of the digital media for persuading people to change their thinking? More than you did when you were a teacher many years ago, probably. Much more available now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very encouraging to see. Before we end the show today, we should maybe focus a little bit on the coldest night of the year, just to make sure that people understand what it's what actually happens in the event.
Yes.
I mean, we all know there are nights that are very cold. In fact, last night was no exception. But it's described as a walking fundraiser. A walking fundraiser. What is a walking fundraiser?
Well, actually, I've been told that it's more like a fundraiser that ends in a walk. So really, this is an opportunity for our community to get behind something. The Coldest Night of the Year has been in Salmon Arm for about 9 years, supporting various charities. This year it came to us to be able to host. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were thrilled, really, because this gave us a tremendous opportunity to raise awareness of the great level of food insecurity here in the Shuswap. And we want to shift the perception that people have of who it is that needs help. This gives us the opportunity to increase the awareness about our society and our name and who we are and the action projects we create. And of course, it gives us the opportunity to have people help to fundraise for us. You know, creating a fundraiser for a charity is very challenging, and it takes a lot of years to be able to really get the level of participation. You know, the Trail Alliance, it took them a long time to be able to have such a successful fundraiser. So this gives us that chance with people participating.
And there's different ways to do it, right? There's different ways to do it. You can form a team.
Yes.
You can join a team. Yeah. Or you can donate directly, right?
That's
right. Lots of different ways to participate.
Yeah, the Coldest Night of the Year website is a great website to visit. It gives a ton of information. You'd go to the website, you'd find our location here in Salmon Arm, and it describes the event very well. It describes mm-hmm. who we are. It tells you how to register. A team is a great way to do this. Because we are a virtual event, there is no single location that we're gathering this year, just due to COVID-19 restrictions. Mm. So by creating a team or a safe bubble, and everybody will have to just at the time understand what the restrictions are, you might have to adapt how you walk, but you get to choose your location. You get to choose whichever 2 or 5 kilometer walk that you would like to take anywhere in the Shuswap.
So
and
it's
with your team, you get to work together towards a fundraising goal.
So it's a virtual event, but it has this component that's not virtual at all. You can get out with your bubble and go for a walk. You pick your own route. You don't go in the formal sort of, you know, this is designated route. You go, in fact, the more variety of routes you follow, the better it is.
That's the one silver lining to this cloud this year. You know, it gives people the opportunity to explore the Shuswap. It also, you are technically able to walk anytime in February, but we are still advertising this as February 20th is National Walk Day. And we, our Food Action Society team, will be walking at 3 p.m. We do have a Facebook event, Coldest Night of the Year Shuswap 2021, and that will have details. Our Facebook page is going to have a lot of details about it. So everybody could walk on the 20th. We have this vision that people could be walking all over the Shuswap at the same time on February 20th. Sure. So that would be beautiful.
Now, for people who are not, you know, computer literate to the nth degree, they can probably just go to their browser and type in Coldest Night of the Year.
Yes.
And they would get...
The website is cnoy.org, and it's a very easy-to-use platform.
That sounds good, because a lot of us in this community who aren't part of the younger generation, of course not us because we're so young, but need to know that there's a simple way to access the information. Now, I thought
we always reach out and get in touch with us too.
Absolutely. There will be much reaching out going on, I hope. So I want to just go around a little bit, give you all a chance to say a few words about some of the basic ideas behind the Food Conversation series. We've used the word food sovereignty, but I'd like to get each of you to sort of share some of your thoughts about what that means. Now, we only have a couple of minutes, but if you could just, maybe Shelley, what to you does food sovereignty mean?
It means, I guess, having more control over the food that we buy, the food that we eat, and certainly with the current pandemic, anybody who hasn't seen the possibility of what if the truck can't get through gets it now.
That's a pretty good definition. Melanie, what are your thoughts about food sovereignty?
Yeah, I mean, individual food sovereignty is being able to make the choices of what kind of food you want to eat. And it would be really great if everybody was able to make choices and afford those choices to be able to eat the best quality food that they can. And regional food security, which is the ultimate goal, is that the Shuswap is able to control more of its own growing practices, how it preserves its food.
I'm going to give you the last 10 seconds, Serena, to say something cogent about food sovereignty.
Well, I always think of indigenous food sovereignty when I think about it, and just the impact of colonialism on how indigenous people have collected their food and lost a lot of the skills and knowledge, and now the environment. You know, the salmon, I hear from elders that, you know, the salmon used to be, the rivers used to be red with salmon, and we don't see that anymore. And I guess it's just, I hope people realize that, you know, food is a gift and we need to respect it.
On the note that food is a gift, we're going to end this first Food Conversation show, and I want to thank all my guests today, Shelley Corbin, Melanie Bennett, and Serena Kaner. This has been a wonderful start. Thank you very much.
Thank you.